group research project that you're going to do here, you will be given another task, if there are any here. You will take this from distance. You will gather some data and then write some kind of a summary based on those data, and then I will do some analysis of that data for you. So there are possibilities for distance students as well to do this. You don't have to be here to take part in the project. I know it. I know there are quite a few who are in that category here. Although most of you actually are on-campus students. One other thing that has been mentioned is that somewhere in the description of the course at Higgs web pages, you see referred to a verse 9 of the course book, the 9th edition of this one. It is the 10th is the newest one, and as a general rule, buy the newest one anyway. So don't worry if it says number 9 and you can't get hold of that one. This is the good one. So it should be available down here at the bookstore as well. And probably it looks like this, does it? There's a blue cover, yeah, right. So there's another cover on the version you have now. Should be the same book. Okay, good science, what is it? Well, it is based on others' work, and that's the central thing here. Research is incremental, it builds on what others have done before you. And good science also is, you could say, all its methods, the way it has done things, should be described in such a way that it can be analyzed and even redone by others in the same way. So it should be possible for others to get to the same conclusions as you have. And you should, when you communicate things in a scientific way, you should communicate all necessary details so that others actually can replicate what you have done. This is the list I have here is a list that I've found in another course book. I've lost the source for this, but you can find a lot of these types of summaries of what good research is built on, and how we can say that something is good and something is bad. Well, there are a number of lists, but I get this, the stuff that's on this list is a pretty good summary of such things. And of course, if you do good science, it should not only be things that has to do with your specific little area. It should be possible to draw some general conclusions from what you have done as well. It should be possible to transfer the, at least you should be able to communicate possible generalizations based on your findings. Good science should not come out of the blue. It should be based on some kind of a logical line of thoughts where one thing builds up the next one. And it should, of course, have some kind of a theoretical fundament. So even if you if you observe some kind of a difference, let's say, let's just take the a very common example. You observe a gender difference in something, in an experiment that you do. If you cannot explain that difference based on some kind of a theory, well, don't report it. It's just a wild finding. You can't explain it. So why report it? You have to have some kind of a logical line of thought and theory to actually get to the conclusion. So It's not good science unless you have this theoretical explanation for what you find. And this goes also for physics, for instance. It's not just to observe something, you actually have to explain it. And finding the good explanation is the real hard work in many cases. It should generate new questions, because you very seldom find the final good, valid answer to all questions. Isn't that the famous number 42 or something? The answer to life, the universe and everything. You seldom find that answer, you find new questions. You find limitations on your research. You question whether this is valid also for more specific cases or for other cases where not all the requirements for our experiment was met. And this generates questions that others can investigate further, that you can investigate further later, or that others can take up and investigate upon. Good research should also be possible, of course. That's something we tend to overlook now and then in our ambitions. And that is something you will be confronted with a few times, or most of you will be confronted with when you suggest the topics for a master thesis, for instance. You tend to be too ambitious. You tend to try to find answers that can't be found until you have answered some more basic questions. So this is also a very good criteria. If you try to find the answer to the final questions in a long row of thoughts that has a lot of prerequisites before you get there, well, you aren't doing the right type of research. You should actually go back and find the answers to the questions that is the foundations for all this, all your thoughts. And then I mentioned one in the end there, which may be questionable. At least some will raise questions on this, but it is raised as a very central research ethics question. Not necessarily that research should be apolitical, but at least that it should show some kind of a social responsibility. Not all findings should be reported, because the consequences of communicating, for instance, small differences that has to do with gender, race, other hot topics, well, some of these issues may be very touchy to take up, because, well, maybe you have done some mistakes in your research. Maybe there are other possible explanations out there. So be careful. This can be the case for quite trivial stuff as well. If you develop some kind of procedure for identifying yourself to a data system, a new way of omitting passwords that actually require people to do a lot of extra work or something like that, well, then you maybe the cost of your conclusion is higher than the benefit that you gain from implementing such a thing. So it's things we can think about. But again, what these the points up here, what they actually points back to is that research is is very much as a circular thing. It goes in circles. It starts with a question and it ends usually with new questions. And there are a number of steps on the way there. Of course, you start out with a question, a very general, it can be a very general question, but at some level, this question needs to be very specific. It needs to be something that is possible to relate to and get an answer on. And to do that, it usually needs to be extremely specific in the end. It can start out as a general problem. I want to make a system that makes computers faster to get access to, whatever. Of course, it's a banal, very simplistic thing. But you have this general idea, but that's not a research question. That's more like a general problem. So it is usually possible to clip that into more and more and more detailed questions. And at one point, those questions will be so specific that it's actually possible to measure things there. Actually, we will probably get back to this, but the general thing here is that research is cyclical. It builds on what others have thought before you. It gives new information, but then it also ends up with conclusions that usually are new questions. In different books, you can find a number of different descriptions of the research cycle or the research process. You can often see circular things. You can see things written with arrows around, where you have the research question, you have the previous research or theory part, you have the method part, you have the data analysis part, and then you have the conclusion part, and then a question again, and then this goes around and around and around. And you can find different, more and more elaborated checklists for how to perform the research. The book you have as a course book here gives you several of these very practical lists of the different steps involved in a good project. So I won't spend time on this now. It's okay. But I'm not going to be a researcher, is something you can say here. I'm an engineer. I want to develop, I want to make this super cool program. This new game that crushes all other games. I want to do something new. Can that be research? Can that be? How can that be treated in a master thesis? Well, it can be. But what you need to do, what you need to explain, when this is the foundation for your thesis, is, well, there must be a reason why you made this super cool product or program. So you had there was something that you were trying to solve here. What was that? Have others tried to do the same thing before you, and why did they fail in doing so? Why are their approaches to this problem wrong? If you do this kind of discussions, if you include them when you are presenting your new fantastic solution, well, then you are adding up knowledge on an area and not only presenting your solution. And by doing that, you also make a much better thesis. Of course, other things that you may want to explain is, are there limitations to my super product? Why didn't it work for all? Why did some feel this was super cool while others thought it was kind of boring? An example of this can be, for instance, well, let's say if take this example, if you're making a game, or if you are including some kind of a gamification element into a program, that's usually things that makes a more trivial task into something fun to do. And one such thing could be to include some kind of a scoring system and a leaderboard or whatever. Let's say you've made a tool now for math teaching or something like that, or for language teaching. Let's say math. So you're including a leaderboard, you're doing this, making this into a game. It's a very popular thing to do today. And you find that overall, yeah, this works. The class that tried this one, they, in general, they liked it. But actually what I found was that a few of the students in this class, maybe one or two or three, really hated this program. So trying to find the explanation, why did someone like it and why did someone hate it? If you can find that, well, then you have added a lot of new knowledge based on your super program that you have developed. And maybe what you will find out is that entering elements like a leaderboard or a scoring system or whatever is something that, well, maybe it appeals to 3 out of 4, but maybe then the fourth person is one that really hates these things and won't use a system where his scores is distributed on a wall somewhere. Well, if that's the case, it's a special case, of course. Well, then this can be a super good master thesis, because then you have added knowledge to why things work and why some things don't work, and you have used your program to find this information. So it's just an example that you can, even if you make something, you can take use of that and find some answers to questions that is bigger and behind that, the tool you have made up. So the main message here is, don't just develop it, think, reflect around it, think of ways to make this into a good thing. Yeah, so it can be done. It can be good research, and good research can be done also when you just want to be a good programmer. Research isn't one thing. I've been very simplistic now and thought, given examples of a certain type of science, which is the classical experiment, more or less. All I refer to is the classical experiment. I will probably keep on doing that, because it's research in its it will come out wrong, but I see in its purest form. It's not better than other types of research. It's just that it's simpler to use as examples. But there are a number of different approaches to research. Most of my examples has to do with what you could call very classic empirical research, where you test a hypothesis, where you try to reduce the uncertainties so that you actually can say that there is a relationship between between a cause and an effect, that there aren't anything else that that influence this. It's empirical in the way that it also gathers data, and it's based on theory, but not all research are like that. Things can be very pragmatic. It can be more like a constructivist thing where you try to actually understand what's going on, more like theory where you do maybe depth interviews of respondents, where you try to analyze things more in detail, where you, rather than trying to explain something with a theory, you try to generate a new theory. That's absolutely good research as well. Actually, it may be relevant for some of you. We'll try to do changes within an organization you're a part of yourself, and where we will try to maybe to change some kind of a culture based on changes that you yourself implement in your organization. A good example of this is of course safety culture. Say you're doing your master thesis in a context where your aim is to improve the safety culture of your own organization. So then you become some kind of an advocate. This is usually called action research. It tends to be quite political because you have a very clear agenda usually for what you do. But it may be good. It may be necessary. It may be the only way to do things. Not all phenomena can be described in an empirical way from the outside. Something maybe explaining things from the inside as well is important now and then. So it can be good. And of course, there are all types of intermediate things where you have a very pragmatic approach, where you do a little bit of all things. So, of course, all this depends on what you want to find out and what's the most practical way of doing things. So we don't judge, let's say, good research by saying that it has to be empirical, experimental research that we are doing. And there are a number of other things than experiments that you can do. You have a number of non-experimental methods, even with numbers, where you actually have things described in numbers. You can do just describe how things are distributed within a population, for instance. Well, such and such number keeps their passwords in this way, such and such number remembers them in this way. Descriptive methods, which we may learn from, and which also may be good research. You may base things on history. You may just want to describe correlations, how things vary in the same way. We'll show maybe we'll show a few correlations later when we do a little bit of data analysis. And you have more typical qualitative research where you rather try to understand a phenomena rather than where you try to understand a phenomena rather than explaining it in numbers. And of course you have the pure experimental methods. But you can say all this has to do with what's practical for you to do there and then. I will use a lot of examples here that has to do with empirical experimental research, that has to do with numbers and number crunching and stuff like that, hypothesis testing. But for all, you can say that the terminology that I use there, the words that I use when I talk about independent variables, dependent variables, when I talk about reliability, validity. These are all terms that we will that I will define later. Well, it goes for all types of research. You have to relate to these terminologies anyway. When we talk about generalizability and validity, when we talk about significance and use words like this, it goes for most types of research. And the concerns we have about things, how we should avoid drawing too quick conclusions and the effect of third variables, etc., is also common for most types of research. I think I will actually just feel free. I will skip a few foils here now, and I maybe get back to them. But I think it's useful to get to a very central point before we end this day that has to do with some terminology here. Because the core of all research, no matter what method you actually use to find the question or to find the answer, well, you need to formulate a good research problem. You need to have something to do research on. And to be able to do this, this research problem need to be, say, very specific. At least in the end, it needs to be very specific. It should say something about the relationship between variables, that something is influencing something else. Certain types of gamers are attracted to certain types of gaming elements, for instance. Then you say that there is a relationship between player type and what they're motivated by, just to continue the previous example. A good research problem should also be, at some point it should have a question in it. It should be possible to put a question mark behind it. Meaning, is it so that a certain type of personality are, or let's say, introvert persons that are rather, that are not exposing themselves to the world, but rather are introverts, looking into themselves, tend to be less motivated by leaderboards and scoring system than those that are extroverts. Then you have said that there is a strong relationship between these two, and it's possible to set a question mark. Is it so that you can formulate this as a question? And of course, when you do this, it should also be possible to put up an experiment or some kind of a situation where you actually test this out, where you let different types of players play a game, and you ask them afterwards what motivated you with this game. It may be too simple, but again, this gives you a pretty good idea that this can be done in a good way. And the core thing here is, of course, that you are able to formulate a very specific research question. In that connection, it's important to take one of these central terminologies right away. I have mentioned it a few times already. It's surprisingly difficult to remember this. What is an independent and what is a dependent variable? You will be asked this question in when you are going to read some short papers, and some 30, 40, maybe 50% will do this wrong. Well, an independent variable is what you could call a part of a situation that influences something else. So in my example, if you use this, why introverts and extroverts, whether they are motivated by different types of gaming elements. The independent variable would probably be we were actually talking about two independent variables there, maybe. We are talking about the gaming elements, and we are talking about the core one is probably player type or player personality. So introverts versus extroverts. That's the independent variable. And the dependent variable here will be motivation or some kind of a measure of motivation. What is it you like? What is it you dislike? And that would be the dependent variable. So the dependent variable is the one that that varies based on different levels of the independent variable. These are central terms because this is what we use in statistics when we try to see whether there is a causal relationship between variables. But this is not useful at all if we are not able to specify the content of, or let's call it the operationalization of different concepts that we raise when we use the name variable. So let's take this as an example. We have a research question here, which is, it seems pretty specific, right? Did Lillehammer make people in the region here more happy? Sounds like a very good or specific research question, but is it? What needs to be defined much more in detail here? Happy. What do we mean by happy here? And if we don't include that in the final hypothesis about the relationship between variables, it's not possible to measure anything, or we can't say anything. Because if we don't specify what we mean by happiness here, it's unmeasurable. How could we measure it? Any ideas? Money? How rich are you? Yeah, okay. It would probably be criticized by other researchers later. This is not a good dependent variable of happiness. Yeah, you can make some kind of, the typical way to do this is to make some kind of a questionnaire as measured by this instrument that tries to measure happiness, as measured by the general happiness indicator or something like that, which may be a method to measure happiness. I don't know. What they did in this experiment was something else. That was kind of clever. They counted the number of smiles on people before and after the Olympics in the main street of Lillehammer and counterbalanced for weather and stuff like that. So there are different ways of doing this, but you need to be specific. So what seems here like a pretty straightforward research question is just the first step, because you need to specify this further as measured by happiness as defined by, or something like that. And this is, of course, a pretty straightforward thing. It's just one thing. You may have to operationalize a number of more detailed things. And you can try this one for yourself. Say, a specific attitude campaign, let's say, putting up signs of accidents or something like that, reduces the speeding on a certain highway stretch, or reduces speeding on highways. This is the general problem description we have. Seems pretty straightforward. What needs to be defined here to be able to, for us to be able to measure something based on this? Any suggestions? Yeah. What do we mean by? Speeding is something that needs to be defined. Yeah. Maybe even the way we try to measure speeding here. Balanced by traffic or whatever. It may be a very complicated formula there, based on weather and amount of traffic and time of day and a number of things. Time of the year. And of course you need to define the attitude campaign that you are using here. So you can't say that just attitude campaigns helps in reducing speeding, because you have applied a specific campaign probably here. But try the next one, that's more complicated. Meditation makes us into better humans, something like that. Here we have a very tricky situation. We need to measure both to specify both the independent and the dependent variable. What needs to be defined here? Better humans. Yeah. What is a better human? Very subjective, but in order to that's why you need to describe it. So you can't say that it's just, well, by better humans we mean, you need to say that makes us less violent, or makes us less likely to beat our wives or something like that. You need to be really specific on this. But of course, it's even worse with the other part of this, meditation. What is meditation here? So unless you specify a certain method of meditation, this can't be done. And of course, you have to compare it with something as well. So you have to compare it to another type of meditation or whatever. So being specific when you formulate the variables is a crucial step if you want to be able to draw any valid conclusion from any study. And by that, I think we say that this was enough for today. And we meet in a week's time. I think there is an assigned slot. We're going to meet at this room every week, I think, and it's going to be from 10:15 to 12 every week from now on. Correct me if I was wrong there, but I think that's the correct one. But time edit will be updated on this. Okay. Have a nice afternoon.
from this book?
The 10th version.
The 10th version.
I'm not necessarily teaching this line by line, but.